Each zone is going to be 20 million meters long, and we're going to number this northern and the southern hemispheres differently. The northern hemisphere, we're just going to start counting northings at the equator and go up until we run out at 84 degrees north. And we're just going to go up in meters. They'll be in the millions as we get higher and higher. Same thing for the south, but in the southern hemisphere, we start at the South Pole and increase as we go north. So when we reach the equator itself, as you see, the equator is 0 meters north in the northern hemisphere, but it's 10 million meters north in the southern hemisphere. Okay, that's our northing, that's our Y coordinate for any given place on Earth. Now we just need an X value, right? And that's easy enough. If we look at the zones that we've created, there are 6 degrees wide. That's 3 degrees on either side of the central meridian. And that corresponds to a little bit less than 10 million, than 1 million meters. Okay? So what we do is we take the straight line that goes right down the middle of the zone and we give it the value for an easting of 500,000, half a million. That means that, in fact, the coordinates continue over the edge of the zone into the next zone a little bit, so that if your country or whatever it is you're mapping happens to go over into the next zone, you can still use the same zone. You don't have to flip over to the zone greater or less than the one you're using. Okay, so if we go to the other side of the zone, beyond 500, it just keeps going up until a million, in which case we need to go over to the next zone. Okay. So here we can give an easting and a northing in meters for any position on the Earth's surface as long as it's not greater than 80 degrees south or 84 degrees north. So, for example, here's the CN Tower in Toronto. See if it makes sense. We are at 630,084 meters east. East of what? Well, east of the central meridian for the zone. And that means that within the zone, it's to the right of the halfway line to the central meridian, because that number is greater than 500,000. We do the eastings first, then we do the northing, 4,833,438 meters north, north of the equator. That's reasonably far north. We're up, Toronto's right about here, so that's that distance on the Earth. But the price of being able to do that is we have to say the zone number, so it's zone number 17, and we have to tell the user which hemisphere we're in. That's the N, stands for the northern hemisphere. So here's a description. This is the first coordinate system that we've met. It has 6 digits in its easting, has 7 digits in its northing, it has 2 other numbers and 1 letter, and that's sufficient to locate anywhere on the Earth's surface to within 1 meter. That's not just the CN Tower in Toronto, it's the top of the spire on the CN Tower in Toronto. I would get a different UTM value when I'm standing here than when I'm standing here, just 1 meter away. If I want more accuracy, I can just give decimal places on the meters. If I want less accuracy, and there are sometimes good reasons to do that, I can just round them to the nearest 10, 100, nearest kilometer, whatever I wanted. Okay, what I've covered so far is what's called the civilian version of the Universal Transverse Mercator Grid Coordinate System. Civilian version because it's the version that's marked on the USGS topographic maps. So if many databases that you'll get and bring into a GIS will use this coordinate system, perhaps instead of latitude and longitude. Many GISs immediately convert that back to latitude and longitude. But they must contain the ability to be able to forward project back into this system. And obviously that means figuring out where the zones are, where we are within the zone, how to project into the transverse Mercator projection, and then how the coordinates work along with it. I said the poles work differently, and indeed they do. The poles give you a little glimpse of an alternative system called the military grid reference system. The military grid and UTM are almost identical. I'll show you the subtle differences in just a second. So first thing to notice about these two areas, the North Polar area UPS zone is smaller than the south. Okay, because on the north part, we go up to 184 degrees north, and we've only got the remainder, and that's 6 degrees of latitude. The southern hemisphere, we've got all the way from 80 degrees south to the pole, so it's a bigger circle to begin with. And we divide it up by putting zero and north right at the top. We split it into an east and west zone, and we give those big letters, A and B, or in the case of the North Pole, Y and Z, and you'll see Y in just a second. And then we subdivide it up into smaller grids that have two letters associated with them, and in fact, we then divide those up into smaller grids as well. Now, this must look like a totally wacky way to do a coordinate system for the poles. In fact, it's consistent with the military grid for the rest of the world. So let me go on and cover that very briefly. It's highly unlikely, unless you're like a polar explorer or something, that you're going to want to do mapping on the poles. I've gone most of my career without having done it. Okay, let's look at coordinate systems that cover the United States in that case. So we've got some standardized systems that are in use. Geographic coordinates, as I mentioned, are often commonly used. So many GISs, when you're displaying the map, will be showing you latitudes and longitudes. Google Earth does this. Google Maps, well, doesn't show your coordinates, but Google Earth does. And remember, if you're showing latitude and longitude, you also have to show what your datum is, because latitude and longitude on NAD27 is different from latitude and longitude on NAD84. So when we give the lat long, we should also give the name of the datum we're using. Then we've got the Universal Transverse Mercator System, the civilian version. That's the one I just went over. It works differently at the poles, as I hinted. Then we have the military grid system, or what's often called MGRS, the Military Grid Reference System. And it's sort of civilian equivalent, which is called the National Grid. Now, several years ago, must be 20 years ago now, a group of retired cartographers got together and lobbied the Department of the Interior to adopt a national grid system for the United States, the same as many European countries like Great Britain have their own national grid system that kids learn in elementary school. Now, they decided the simplest way to do that was to just use the military grid. So, in fact, they got it approved. The military grid, in its civilian version, became the United States national grid. There's only one subtle difference, and I'll introduce that in just a second. And then we've got the last system here that I'm going to cover today, state plane. Now, state plane is a system that's used in the profession of surveying. It's a little bit more accurate than these global grid systems that I'm talking about. And that is to support the profession of surveying, where you often have to, you know, put a property boundary down with an enormous degree of accuracy and precision. So that system is often preferred. I'll go over how it's compiled in just a minute. So let me my bottom line here, just as I said for projections, if we're going to edge match or overlay, not only do we have to have the two layers in the same projection, they're going to need to be in the same coordinate system. So we could have two state maps that are both on transverse Mercator projection, but if they're in different zones, they're not going to match. They need to be in the same exact coordinate system. So here's the way the military grid works. Military grid was adopted in the 1940s by NATO. So it applies to all the US Armed Services, applies to most of the federal government, emergency management, FEMA, all of these agencies. It also applies to any Army or Air Force or Coast Guard activities worldwide, including to many of the Marine services. The first part's fairly easy. The projection is the transverse Mercator. The range is from 80 degrees south to 84 degrees north. Sounds familiar. The zones are indeed numbered 1 to 60 as we go from the 180th meridian, not the international date line, that's an irregular line, the 180th meridian back to the 180th meridian all the way around the world. The difference is that they now divide the Earth up into 8-degree chunks north-south. Okay, each one of those is going to get its own projection. We're going to recenter the projection within each chunk. So in theory, we've got a 6-by-8-degree block. Well, there's one place where that's going to break down, and that's in that last strip at the top. because we number down by eights, we fall nicely on the 80 degrees south, but as we number up by eights, we don't fall at 84 degrees north. We have to make the last zone 12 degrees wide instead of 8 degrees wide. So that's why it looks elongated, the very last one at the top. Then in the very high latitudes where navigation becomes an issue, it's pretty much been decided that each major island with its own navigation functions is going to have its own zone. So there are a total of about six different zones, like 30V, 32V, 31X, which have been moved around and adjusted so that they fit the island that they're due to represent. Svalbard, for example, way up there. Okay. Otherwise, we letter off the 8 degrees cells going from south to north. Now, we've already used up A and B for the South Pole in the Universal Polar Stereographic. So we start at C. You can see C in the lower left-hand corner. There it goes C, D, E, F, G, H, and then I is missing. We leave out I and O because they can be confused with 1 and 0. H, J, K, L, M, N, O is missing. P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X. And Y and Z are used in the North Polar Stereographic Projection. Okay, so now we can give a designation for an entire 6 by 8 degree cell simply by saying we want, let's say for Madagascar there, it would be 38K. So cell 38K would be an entire 6 by 8 degree block framing Madagascar. Here are some of the blocks that cover the United States. And I put this up just to show you that they look different on different projections, but also to point out the fact that there is some source of confusion, especially in our neck of the woods. So if you look at Santa Barbara right there, we're divided between zones 10S and 11S. Well, 10S, that looks an awful lot like zone 10 southern hemisphere, like the civilian system. So beware. Be sure that you know exactly whether in the civilian or the military grid designations. Okay, here's the designation right around the beginning of the system. And if you look up there around between 4Q and 5Q, we have the island of Hawaii. So we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean here, and we're going out as far as the 180th meridian. And just notice the numbering here. We're in zone 1, then 2, then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, we're going off from the 180th meridian, increasing number as we go around the world. As we cross the equator, we are in zone N. We miss O, we go to P, Q, next would be R, and so on. So the white letters are the grid cell designators, as they're called. Okay, now just to make things additionally confusing, because this is a specialty of the Department of Defense, we then drop down to another level of grid cells. Okay, and these grid cells are 100,000 meters, or 100 kilometers on a side, and they're relatively square because now we're zooming in on the projection itself. And you notice that right there as we cross the equator and cross the 180th meridian, we've got a little part of a cell, and we call that one AA. And you notice the next one is BA, CA, DA, EA, FA, GA, and so on. It just keeps increasing. We use the exact same lettering. We leave out I and O. And instead of stopping when we get to the next zone, we just keep going until we get to X, Y, and then we start over again at A. So we sort of cycle through the letters going this way. We do the exact same thing going this way. So you can see that we go from BA, BB, BC, BD, BE, BF, and so on. Notice we have problems at the edges of the 6 by 8 degree blocks where we've got half cells, but generally speaking, each one of these cells is 100,000 meters or 100 kilometers on the side. So now we've got the grid cell designator, the big white letters, and another designation which consists of two letters, which brings us down to 100 by 100 kilometers on the ground. Now we're just going to use meters, just like the civilian UTM system. So within 100,000, that means the largest number we could have is 99999. So they're going to be five digits for the east and five digits for the north. I put this up just to show you the problems that we often get within zones. So these are the first digit, that's the 10,000 meter increments, the cells within the 100,000 cells. And this is an area where you've got a division between two zones. Well, what happens? You get a very weird way to designate not just the central grid designators, but also the second level and the third level numbers. So that we got some problems here. The system is not quite so consistent. What am I showing you here? Dead center on that is the exact center of Hurricane Katrina, center of New Orleans. Okay, so we had just when we need coordinates in national emergencies, we end up somehow having all national emergencies at places where grid cells intersect and become indistinct. That's almost like a law of geography. You know? The place where the system is at the weakest is where it will receive the most stress. Okay, I've got some examples of specific coordinates to show you in just a minute. But before I do that, I want to move on to the third, or actually the fourth, coordinate system in common use in the United States. And you will encounter data sets in all of these different coordinate systems. And that's the state plane system. The state plane system is a state system, obviously. So it works for the 50 states and actually extends to some of the territories. So it works to some extent in Puerto Rico and Guam and other places like that. It is separate and in fact uses a separate map projection for each state. In fact, it uses a separate map projection for each zone in each state. So it gets fairly complicated. Here are these zones. There are 120 of them in the current designation for the 50 states. And obviously different states have different numbers of zones. So for example, North and South Carolina, Kentucky and Tennessee, have a single zone that covers the entire state. Hawaii has one zone that covers the entire state, but it's certainly not true of places like Alaska or California. Okay, here are some examples of different states. Multiple things to notice on this slide. First thing is that two different projections are used, actually three different projections. I'll explain the difference in a second, but primarily two different projections are used. The transverse Mercator projection, which as we've seen, works really well when you have something that runs north-south, like a strip that fits within a single zone. So anything that runs north-south, you can choose a central meridian that goes down the center of it, and you can get a pretty accurate grid across it. Things that run east-west are best mapped on, in this case, a projection called the Lambert conformal conic, which is used quite frequently for mapping in the United States. Now, the thing to realize, let's take a state like New Mexico, which is shown twice here. It's shown twice because when the system was updated in 1983 from NAD-27 to NAD-83, they decided to metrify the system, go over to meters instead of feet. But they also decided to change, in a couple of cases, projection. And in many cases, they moved counties between zones. So New Mexico is a good example. It used to follow county boundaries according to the bottom one. They changed it around a little bit according to the top one in New Mexico, east, central, and west. So take a state like New Mexico that's a little bit more north-south in extent than east-west. If we divide it up into zones, north-south into strips. Now we can have three central meridians and draw that on a transverse Mercator, and the three zones are going to be mapped reasonably well. Let's take a state like Texas, which is a Lambert conformal conic state. Here we divide it up into strips that go east-west and draw those on a Lambert conformal conic, which minimizes distortion east-west. And we've got, in this case, five zones. We call them Texas North, Texas North Central, Texas Central, Texas South Central, and Texas South. Okay. Each state can make its own choice about which projection it adopts and how it divides itself up into zones. They're relatively set in concrete now. I don't think you're going to see much of a change, although we did see some changes back when we went to NAD 83. California is one of the states that did make a change, a major change, in 1983. It's elongated north-south, so it's divided up east-west. So its zones are based on the Lambert conformal conic. And it has six zones numbered going from the north to the south. It used to have seven. LA County, for some reason, used to have its own zone, zone seven. But that was discontinued and it got folded into zone five for after 1983. So right here, we're in zone five. California Zone 5 in the state plane system. How do coordinates work? Let's just go over that. Basically, it depends on, again, upon the state. But in most cases, what we do is we choose a point that's outside of the zone to the lower left, because, again, we want positive eastings and northings. And that's usually done by choosing the central meridian for the projection and then choosing an offset for the origin. And then we simply measure meters east and meters north from that point. Okay. Nevada, for some reason, decided to do things totally differently and decided they didn't want any numerical overlap between their old system and their new system, which resulted in some very bizarre numbers, but that's just Nevada. They do things differently. Old maps that showed this for NAD 27 are going to have state plane coordinates marked in feet. Anything after 1983 is going to have these marked in meters. Okay. Most data sets you're going to get are going to be newer than 1983, so they're going to reflect meters, probably. But when you scan a topographic map, or get to bring in a topographic map to put in a GIS, it probably has the older feet on it, and you're going to need to convert it into meters. Okay. Complicated. All right, so here's the test. Here's some examples of each of the systems. The first one was the first one he introduced, the civilian UTM system, 238,478 meters east of the central of the origin, 3,811,950 meters north of the equator, zone 11, northern hemisphere. Okay, these are all the same place. They're actually my office. The second one is the military grid reference. Okay, notice what we've done here. First of all, it's just one string. So it goes grid cell designators, easting, northing, all just jammed together into one string. You have to be able to recognize which is which. Remember, the eastings and the northings are all going to be less than 100,000 in meters, so they're only going to take up five places. So here we have a reference to a meter, 11 SKU. So zone 11, just like the zone 11 for the first one, it's the same zone, same as the civilian system. S11S is the 6x8 degree cell into which Santa Barbara falls, and you saw that a little earlier on. KU is the second level, 100,000 meter grid cell designator. So that 11S KU gets us down to 100,000 meters. And then the X value is in red, and the Y value is in blue in this case. Let me just point something out that's a huge convenience. See what I've highlighted in the civilian UTM coordinate is the X coordinate for the easting coordinate. And if you look at the same point, the equivalent value in the military grid, the last five digits are the same because they're based on the same reference system. So that's a pretty handy. You see, the 11950 is exactly the same for the northing as well. All right. Now we also covered latitude and longitude. So here we've got one of them. There are about six different ways you can write latitudes and longitudes. Here we've got north 34, 24, 57.24 west. North west 119.50 minutes 42.9 seconds. And there are many other ways to designate that. Strictly speaking, if it was a coordinate, I should also tell you the datum. So I should say NAD 83 or WGS 86. Now the last one is a state plane coordinate. So it's 603,153 is the easting in meters from the zone origin. 1,830,382 meters is the northing, within the local origin, and we're in CA5 or California Zone 5, the zones that I just showed you. Okay, that was sort of a whirlwind tour of the coordinate systems. If you go into the National Map Viewer, which is the USGS's way of serving out all of the digital renderings of the topographic maps that it contains, it's pretty handy because it contains all of the, or at least some of these coordinate systems. So here I've gone and pointed to pretty much exactly where I'm standing right now and popped up the coordinates. I've enlarged it over here. So we can see decimal degrees, degrees, minutes, and seconds, two different ways of doing latitude and longitude. USNG is the US National Grid, 11SKU38559119.04 in NAD83. So that's the US National Grid reference. And you notice that the MGRS is also exactly the same thing. It's 11SKU38559119.04. It's exactly the same as the US National Grid. That's on WGS84. That's the only difference. That's a very, very minor difference. The difference between the US National Grid and the Military Grid Reference System is maximum 2 meters as we go all the way around the opposite side of the planet. That's when the two datums get out of whack a little bit. And then down here, I also looked up the state plane coordinate. There are coordinate converters out there on the web. You just go to the National Geodetic Survey. They've got coordinate converters that allow you to post in any one coordinate reference and translate it to any other one. Obviously, that's what GIS does, except it does it whole map layers at a time. Okay, so GIS package should be able to at least move and convert between map projections, coordinate systems, datums, and ellipsoids. All of those things that we've just learned about. Now, if you actually go into the nitty-gritty, if we look up the PRJ file associated with a map layer, you'll see something looking like this. And even though it looks like gobbledygook, some of this you should now be able to interpret. So we've got ProjCS is teal albers. So albers is a type of projection. Teal is actually the California Teal Data Center. GeogCS stands for Geographic Coordinate System, and it uses the North American datum of 1927. The spheroid is the Clark 1866 ellipsoid, just another one of those ellipsoids that are measured. And the prime meridian it uses is Greenwich, the units is degrees, the projection is the albers, and it has a series of parameters that you might recognize, look like false northings of 40 million meters, central meridians of negative 120, values that should now look a little bit familiar. Latitude of origins and meters associated with this. So this is just the metadata, or the information that allows any one given data set with its coordinates to be projected into the coordinate system in which it's going to be used analytically within the GIS. Okay, I've got 5 minutes left to cover just a few other points about geographic data because it is pretty unique. It has the following characteristics. Volume, we often talk about big data these days. Geography data's always been big. There's no such thing as a small data set in GIS. They're all big. They get especially big if you want to deal with, let's say, the whole planet at very high resolution. And there are special techniques for dealing with that we're going to cover later on in the class. It has dimensionality because we deal with things on the Earth that are points, lines, and areas, and in some cases, volumes. And it has continuity. Some things are continuous, like air pressure. Some things are discontinuous, like state income taxes. We cross the border between two states, we change the tax rate. Now, to build the more complex features that we're going to put in the database, we start with the points. We use collections of points to build up lines. We just have to remember the sequence in which they're connected. And then we can connect lines together to make areas. That's pretty much what we've got here. So we start with raw numbers that are the coordinates. And those coordinates are in one of the coordinate systems I've just covered. And they assume a projection. They assume a datum. We connect the points together. We can make a complex feature like a line, a wiggling stream, let's say. We connect lines together. We can make areas if we choose to. Some things just consist of lines. So for example, here's the very beginning of the first polygon for North America in the CIA's World Data Bank. There it is on the left-hand side, part of the coastline of the state of Washington. If we zoom right in on part of that, we end up with just straight line segments connected by points. So if we drive right in on any geographic database, something that may look like it's infinitely detailed is actually finite. It's just points and lines connecting the points. Features on the landscape that we deal with are not all uniform. They're different sizes. They have different spatial distributions. You know, people live in cities. We don't tend to live uniformly across the landscape. They have regular patterns that are often reoccurring. They have properties of contiguity. Things are adjacent to each other. You can imagine, say, going state by state, counting how many states are adjacent to any given state. You can make a map of the how many states are adjacent to every state. That'd be kind of an interesting map. I think Georgia wins, actually. We can talk about neighborhoods. So what is immediately adjacent to any point on the map? What's closest by than the area surrounding it? We can talk about shapes, and things often have very distinctive shapes, sufficient that if I showed you a picture of a river and, let's say, a political boundary, and exactly the same symbol, let's say they were both red lines, the same width, you'd be able to tell which is which just by using your intuition, unless the political boundary, of course, followed the river. They have this property of scaling, and we talked a bit about scaling, but the other property of scale that is important is generalization, because we're going to display maps at all sorts of different scales. And things have different orientations. We usually assume north is up, but that's certainly not the case. We can put north in any direction we like. And being innovative about how a map is oriented can often change things and the look of it. The book covers some of these features, some of these same features, and talks about them as basic properties of geographic features. So, wow, put myself on time now. So much of geographic analysis and description consists of investigating the properties of geographic features, such as their shape and orientation, determining the relationships among features. So what's the relationship between this layer, or features in this layer and features in that layer? It determines shape, distribution, size of features, and determining adjacency, proximity, and particularly in intersection, what overlaps with what. Okay? Next, we're going to go on to maps and how they appear inside databases once we convert them from analog to digital. Obviously, coordinates are going to come into play there. If you did not get a copy of the software that I just handed out, come and see me, and I've got some copies to give you. Otherwise, I'll see you all on Thursday.
I did not get a copy of the software.
Okay, you just said that on video.
You know, you might need to put this right here.
You got one?
It might be better if it's choking up your head.
It is? Oh, you could have told me. Okay. Yeah, I was standing a lot closer to it than I usually do.
But if you put it here, I bet it's...
Yes, just take one. Right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Let's get rid of this.
So I don't know
if that's if that happens again, wave or something, William, I'll come and correct it. Yeah, you know, as it gets further and further away, though, you see less. If I come out here, I have to zoom in on it, and then I've got a very tight zone that I have to stay inside.
Thank you very much for this. It's very cool.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Not Mac compatible, but maybe everyone.
Flip it open and see whether it's Mac compatible.
They haven't been in the past, unless it just changed for this.
Yeah, you can use the online version.
But at home I have a desktop.
Okay, so it sounds like you're good.
It's pretty easy to install, too. All
right.
So I'm...
Okay, bye-bye.